This will be the last year of the, till, I guess, September. So what I want to try to do is first finish up a little bit in the Shaka Vitaria, which will take us through the end of Zion Amud Beis. I'm not going to do all the Zion Amud Beis, which is mostly Divrei Agada, but basically it will bring us up to, we would have done the main, all the topics, pretty much, till Ches Amud Aleph. And then, if there's time, and I hope there will be a little bit of time, so just to speak very, very quickly about one other topic for which we have extra makoros today, and that is, which you have in front of you actually, about Kavana and Koach Gavra of the Shechita, which will, again, bring us back to where we started from, I guess, at the beginning of the year. So first let's start at the end and then finish up, and then if we have a chance, we'll discuss that other issue. The last thing that we discussed before Shavuos was the question of chashad. If a person is chashad l'davar achad, does that mean he's chashad l'davar achir? What about a person who is chashad with respect to dvarim, she'ein, hamakilim, afilu, ovrim bahem? That was the whole discussion of the Rajba and the Shulchan Aruch, the Psak and Yoredei. That's a very important issue, both in terms of psychological profile of Yisra Behefer. Well, thank you so much. Perfect. As well as, I don't know what volume you brought tonight, so I'm reminded that too. As well as the halakhos themselves. So that brings us up to Vavo and Beis. Again, we skipped around a little bit, so I just want to read the connecting Gemaras, because they too are very important. The Gemara here in Vavo and Beis. So the Gemara says, where we left off was Hey, Rabbi Yeshua ben Zarus. We actually read this line a couple of times too, but we didn't read the whole thing, so I want to go through that to complete the circle. Hey, Rabbi Yeshua ben Zarus. It's about middle way down on Vav Amud Beis. Hey, Rabbi Yeshua ben Zarus ben Chamiv Shur Rabbi Meir Lefnei Rabbi. Al Rabbi Meir, they all reported that Rabbi Meir Achal Ola Shol Yerek de Beit Shan. Rabbi Meir was seen to be munching on a Yerek vegetable in Beit Shan. What is so earth-shattering about Rabbi Meir eating vegetables in Beit Shan? So as Rashi explains, and it is clear in the Gemara, what they mean is that he obviously, or it seemed at least, that he was not mafrish, trumos, and isros. He simply plucked a vegetable from the ground in Beit Shan, and he ate it. Okay, that's how Rashi explains it. Ola shel yerek velo iser. The hit to Rebbe as Beis Shan kula al yado. So Rebbe was so impressed with this report. This is an amazing thing again about Rebbe Meir eating vegetables without having been meiser in Beit Shan, that he came to the conclusion that Beit Shan does not have kedushas eretz Yisrael leinyan trumos maisros, and he was matir based on this story. Hit to Rebbe Beis Shan kula al yado. So when this happened, so this obviously caused quite a stir, because until then people were makbid to be mafresh trumas and isis in Beit Shan. All of a sudden, Rebbe, because of the story he heard about Rabbi Meir, right, changed the halachic policy. So chibru alav echav u'beis aviv, right, his family members ganged up on him, and amrlon, they said, makom sheavosecha ve'avos avosecha noagu bo iser. This is like a long-standing Isser in the community. I mean, everybody's knowing to mafresh trumas and isros, to treat Beit Shan as if it has kedushas, tavuas, trumas and isros, Eretz Yisrael. And this is our family long-standing tradition as well. And all of a sudden, you're throwing all of this out. So, unfazed, he turned to them and he said, Darish lehem mikra zeh. And by the way, we should explain exactly what it is. It's machlokas here before we get to the justification. The Rashi explains, Hitu Rebbe al pieta zu at Beit Shan kulo, lecho yerek shelo, upero se'ilon b'tivlon. Kasalta gaita, kasav Rabbi Meir lav me'eretz Yisrael. The understanding was that Rabbi Meir believed that Beit Shan was not part of the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, who ma'isa dagan b'chutz laretz, who noig midrabanan, and hol ba'aretz daraisa, avo ma'isa yerek de ba'aretz gufa drabanan, lo gazur midi B'chutzlaretz. The rule is as follows. Everybody agrees that vegetables are only chai b'trumas and isros midrabanan. And since that's the case, if Beit Shan is not part of Eretz Yisrael Daraisa, so the only thing they were mitakin was the tvua that needs hafrasha Daraisa in the gvulos that are Daraisa, but the chiyuvei drabanan, like Maisu Yerek, that was dropped if the boundaries are outside of Daraisa Eretz Yisrael. The im Eretz Yisrael, who, of course, had it been part of Eretz Yisrael, then afagav Rameir v'Rabbi Achar Chur, but even though Rabbi Meir and Rabbi lived after the Churban bias, and therefore one could have said that Trumos and Maestros anyways is Drabanan, and therefore there should be no obligation. But Kaimel and Maestros Dragon Daraisa, nonetheless, the psak is that Trumos and Maestros, even after the Churban, are considered to be Daraisa after the Churban Bayashen. The Yerek Drabanan, the Kedusha Achrona, the Ezra Kidsha Afla Asid Lavo, Kiriktani, Hitzu Rebbe Yisbeit Shan, Bechal, Sharmakomos, no egg, Bahem. So what we're talking about here is whether or not to allow all Tavua to be eaten as Tavel, but at least to allow Maisu Yerek, which is only Drabanan, even in the best of times and places. Not succeeding in my endeavor here. You'd probably, like to test me this one. But I'm unfazed, and before this year is over, I'm going to have, a drink of this. The point is that the, as a result of this mice of Rameir, the Psak of Rebbe, so the conclusion was that Beit Shan no longer has this status. So the Gemara says, what did Rebbe answer to the charge that he was going against the minhag and his family minhag, etc.? So Darsh Lahem Mikrozeh. So he quoted to them the following pasuk: V'chitas nechasha nechoshes asher asa Moshe ki ad hayamim ahema hayu bnei Yisrael mekatrim lo v'yikra lo nechushtan. So this is the pasuk that he quoted, that all of a sudden they destroyed the Nechash HaNechoshes and they threw it out because it was being treated as an Avodah Zarah. And what does this have to do with Beit Shan? Esher Bo Aso. Thank you. Sorry to distract you so much. Esher Bo Aso V'lo Biro Bo Yoshafat V'lo Biro V'lo Kol Avodah Zarah Sheva Olam Aso V'Yoshafat Biro. Aso V'Yoshafat tried to eradicate all of Avodah Zarah from Klal Yisrael, and they got rid of all sorts of idols, and the Nechash HaNechoshes, because it had special status, it was, used in the Hatzalah of Klal Yisrael in the Midbar, so that was never banned. That was never destroyed. So all of a sudden, when he came, Chizkiyahu, all of a sudden he's going to be a bigger tzaddik than Asa and Yehoshaphat. It was good enough for them, like you hear all the time. It was good enough for them, but it wasn't good enough for him. Right? What was this chumrah, or right-wing tendency of Melech Hizkiyahu? So what's the answer? Ella, this is Rebbe defending his action, explaining, Mokom hinichalu avosav lihizgaderbo. Afani, Mokom hinichalu avosai lihizgaderbo. Meaning, when it's the explanation for Hizkiyahu was, this is how he saw it. No one quite perceived it the same way before him. And the rule is, Mokom Menichu Avosenu Lizgadarbo. There is room for Chiddush in Halacha, as long as it's projected by the proper figure of authority and backed up or reinforced with proper methodology and logic. And the same thing holds true with Rav Meir and Rebbe being Matir Beit Shan. Whatever the evidence, or the new evidence, or the different way of looking at the evidence was, this chiddush is one which is justified. That's the explanation, and then he goes on to explain. Mikan the Talmud Chacham Shomar Dvar Halacha. From here we see that if the Talmud Chacham comes up with a new spin or a new approach to a matter of halacha, Shein Mazichin Oso V'Amar La'in Maznichin Oso V'Amar La'in Mazchichin Oso, etc. In other words, we do not ridicule, we do not reject, we don't castigate, we don't accuse, this Talmud Chacham of somehow violating the Mesorah, right, of starting a new religion. If he has the proper credentials, we have to respect his position. Doesn't mean we have to follow it necessarily. There are rules about that as well. Sometimes he has to succumb to the majority rule also. That's the rule of Zaken Mamre. So this is all by no means a simple matter. But the point is, there are conditions under which we highly respect the Chiddush of a Talmud Chacham. Then the Gemara goes on to explain, Man da'omar mazichin ki nefsiv lo yizach ha'kol shem, Man da'omar ein maznichin nefsiv ki lo yiznach le'olam ha'shem, Man da'omar mazchichin d'tzman misharabu zechuche halev rabu machlokes b'yisrael. Okay. So what do all these things mean? So Rashi explains as follows, and this is very quickly. Number one, Mokom minichu, Rashi explains on the top of Zayin and Aleph, Kishu yavo b'neinu acharenu, That's a very strange Rashi. It sounds, on the surface, like a commercial for self-aggrandizement. Thank you very much. Sorry?
Helping somebody else become greater is not as much of a problem.
That's true. But I think, in addition to that, Bameh Agadel Shemam, you're absolutely right. I mean, the perspective, if I say Bameh Agadel Shemi, that would be a whole lot more disturbing than Bameh Agadel Shemam. But even that, what exactly do we mean by it? But I think, frankly, that what's being invoked here is the Pasuk right in the beginning of Lech Lecha, Vagadla Shemecha, meaning not Gidul Hashem in the sense of self-aggrandizement, but in the sense of providing like a framework in which a person can develop and become great. That's what a Gadla Shemecha. The Baruch Shalom isn't just saying to Avraham Avinu, if you do what I want, then I'll make you famous. What he's saying is, the idea of shame in general, and a shame Gadol in the world of Torah is one which reflects authentically the substance. It's not just some sort of reputation that is undeserved or publicity or empty publicity. It really does reflect Gidul Hashem, the whole idea of shame in general. Shame Hashem, shame Tov, Keser Shame Tov. All of these things reflect real substance and real stature, something, a reputation that an individual deserves. So I think what Rashi is referring to here is Bamei Gadel Shemam, in the same way as Vagadlo Shemecha. I will give you the opportunity to grow and to develop and, to deserve the kind of fame that is substantive. So I think that's a very, very crucial, I haven't seen it elsewhere, but I think clearly that's what Rashi has in mind. As for these Zechuche, Zenuche, etc., so Rashi explains what they are. Mikan Sharina Shakimo Rabbi Edazu, the Limed Him Vlamad Hemena, Apapi Shadavar Temahu, Sharima Olama Yonogabo Isra, Lamanu Shain Mazrichen, Tamut Kacham, Omer Bahalacha, Chidush Lomar, Lo Shamata. Meaning, what would be the response that we're rejecting here? When you first hear Tamut Kacham say something that is truly a departure from the norm, something that is really innovative, you might say, well, you couldn't have heard that, right? You must have misunderstood. Or in maschichin, in mavdilin oso mishmuaso, lomar chazar b'chal. Or you don't pressure him to recant. That's another perspective. The truth is, all these are elements. Or in maznichin, mishaksin es devarav. You don't belittle, and you don't speak, in a derogative way about his dvar chiddush, even if you disagree with it. And maschichin lomar gavascha gormalacha shloitisa ozen l'shmoa davar kiochasa mipirabcha lishnachrine magbien umesalken osa midvarav. And zechuche loshem gavoa halev shlodiktik mipirabcha kol tzorchol v'samcha libam. So again, there's accusations here of inaccuracy, accusations here of dangers of lack of uniformity per se, we can't because it's different, and the sense of ego, what's driving this particular Kiddush, Is it really a sincere understanding of the topic, or is it, again, the effort to establish a name for oneself in its own right, not where the name follows the substance, but where the substance is motivated by the effort to establish a kind of reputation.
How do we guard against this type of defense? They'll use this, and they're not entitled to it.
So there's a very interesting Sam Sofer in his parish here on Chulin. He speaks of a bunch of other places too, where he says, don't read this Gemara and be misled into thinking that it's so easy, you know, for someone just to, you know, clap on the table and announce, say, a new chiddush, a new approach to halacha. He said, actually, the general rule, we should pay more attention to what one shouldn't be doing than what should be doing. In other words, he says, it's important every time a person is about to take a maverick, you know, kind of approach in the matter of halacha, that he do a kind of check on himself. And he say to himself, before other people say it to him, you know, zechuche, zenuche, zenuche. These are the kind of things that you should be checking for before you go public in what appears to be a matter of conviction. Check and redouble your efforts to examine, you know, what it is that's motivating you, whether or not you're reflecting accurately the Mesorah, whether or not, you know, being Roas Hanolad, this is something that is going to contribute and enhance the Jewish community, or it's something that is going to fragment it. So these things that were Ein Mazchichen, Ein Mazichen, Ein Maznichen are the checks that help to ensure that when you actually, you know, still hold strong to your conviction and you say Mokom Menichel is God there, that you're doing so in a way which is consistent with the Mesorah. Then the Sam Sofer goes on to say, and even then you should know that it's people like Rebbe and Rabbi Meir and Chizkiyahu HaMelech, people whose track record in Chachma and in Yerasam Kodemus HaChachmasam, they're the ones about whom we can say Ein Mazchichen, Ein Maznichen, because their whole reputation is based on personality, which is consistent with these qualities. And for them to be saying a Chiddush, despite undoubtedly going through this checklist, constitutes obviously a very, very compelling framework, you know, for acceptance as well. But he says the regular, even the regular Talmud Chacham, says Sam Sofer, who comes up with this much of a Chiddush, he says you have to be very careful.
Rosh Hashanah, I learned some time ago, I think others here may have heard it also, you have Chabonim, what's Talmud Chachamim? They decide, I'm going to sit down and learn and put in the time, I'll take over. Yeah, I'm going to be the Chadesh Torah.
Right.
He says it won't happen. That's not the way Chiddushim come. It's for learning, but the geese of all. When the Chiddush comes, it has to come to you. Not that you're on a track, you put yourself on a Chiddush track. That
right.
Doesn't happen. He said, that's not what you make.
No, I think it's absolutely true. These things have to come naturally, and they have to come out of people of stature who have the you know, the authority for it. Again, I often try to say there's the Dvarim HaKashim we just read in this week's Parshan, Parshas Valoscha, you know, about the departure of Yisro. And it's very fascinating. And Moshe Rabbeinu begs Yisro to stay. You know, he says, Yisalanu Le'enayim. It's very complimentary to him. The Chazal point out, you know, the names, Chobeb and the Parsha that, you know, belongs to Megalgo and Zchusai Dezakai. Yisro's biggest contribution was in reorganizing the way in which, Talmud Torah and halacha and spiritual guidance was filtered down to Klal Yisrael with the hierarchies, beginning with Moshe Rabbeinu, and through, you know, a whole system of others. That of course was his contribution in Parshas Yisrael, and that system is very important, and all parts of that hierarchy are very important. But we can never lose sight of the fact that even with Yisro's suggestion, the formulation is that the Dvarim HaGadolim and the Dvarim HaKashim go to Moshe Rabbeinu. And there's no Moshe Rabbeinu, so there's no single Moshe Rabbeinu in the world since Moshe Rabbeinu, so it's the Shivim Zakenim or whoever it is that that assumes that position in every generation. But you have to understand, I mean, the Gemara says this in Chagiga, on the Pasuk, Rabim Chalol Mepila Vatsumim Kol Harugeha, So the Gemara says there are two types of problems. One is mi sheigia lahara ve'ena mora, a person who really has the stature and authority, but he doesn't want to take responsibility to involve himself in being decisive and taking a leadership position. And then there's the opposite problem, and that is the problem of mi she'eno higia lahara, umore. And the Rambam codifies this, of course, in the Chasam HaTorah as well. He says very, very clearly that these are not equal problems. While we're critical of mi she'higia lahara ve'eno mora, right, but mi she'eno lo higia lahara umore, that he calls a shota and a gas ruach and a rasha. And obviously these are not equal problems. People have to develop and they have to assume their position of responsibility. But obviously for people to usurp the position that they have or the stature that they have and to reach beyond is a very serious problem. The Rambam even has a third category, which is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch and Yaradeya as well. And that's, those people who are higia lahara. But again, they're in over their heads on a particular type of question. And he calls them, shualim ktanim, who are trying to make a name. It's interesting in light of this Gemara, trying to make a name for themselves, where they should be ceding authority to others. And he's very critical, Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, there as well. So there's an art in, knowing what your place in the hierarchy is, continuing to learn, being ambitious in your development, so that you can assume more and more responsibility if it's appropriate for you, personality-wise and talent-wise. But also knowing, Ad Kan, when to give in or when to step back. And it's the Dvarim HaKashim and the Dvarim HaGadolim of, various levels in this hierarchy, which one has to be sensitive to. So on the one hand, it's Makom Midichal is God there, and that's a very important principle. It's why halacha can be dynamic and fresh, and for the people who do have the stature, we should always be open to their new ideas and initiatives. For other people, it can be a good suggestion. They can bring it to people of authority. But obviously, there are many cautions. It's particularly fascinating that the Chasam Sofer, let me just say this also, was so reticent, let's say, in the reading of this Gemara. And he says, it's very few people, and this is abused a lot, and it fragments the Jewish community when it's done improperly. The reason that's particularly fascinating is because Chasam Sofer himself was an exceptionally innovative posek, an incredibly intuitive posek. Right? It's known that Chasam Sofer himself says, some of his tshuvas, that sometimes he kind of gives the answer without fully absorbing himself some of the rayas. He relied on his intuition. Intuition, not in such an amorphous way. I mean, intuition, a life of dedication to Talmud Torah, where he felt, as a matter of conviction in his total exposure to the system, very strongly about certain issues, sometimes before he could, articulate it to his satisfaction or find the rayas that, would reinforce his position, he nonetheless already had developed the strong conviction that, this is the direction that the psak needs to take. So when you consider that kind of a remarkable, level of authority, for him to be the one who's, signaling the note of caution and reticence about, this kind of a gemara, and he was incredibly machadish in certain things. I mean, certain things that Chasam Sofer says are just, if it wasn't Chasam Sofer, it would be tamua, but, he was the Gadol Hador. And I think it's not a contradiction in any way, on the contrary. I think, it's ironic and reinforcing. Meaning, Chasam Sofer understood that you have to know you have to be attuned to the whole system. And then your chidushim, fit in a certain way. He didn't view, probably, his own chidushim as being innovative and a sense of departure, and certainly not, therefore, subject to the zechuche, zenuche, and so on. It's just like, the position of Rabbi Eliezer, said the Me'olam Lo'amar Davar Shalo, said about himself, Shalo Shama Mipirabo, when we know that he said many innovative things. His self-image and his perception, and I'm not saying that it wasn't the reality, was that he was the product of the Mesorah that he had received. And that what he was doing was simply applying it, And that's how he perceived it. That we, as, you know, I guess detached observers or people who aren't as intuitively attuned to his Masorah, see some of the things that he said as being new and groundbreaking, you know, is not contradictory to his self-image. And more important is how he perceived himself in the link of the Masorah, in a certain sense. And I think that is true of the Chassam Sofer, as innovative as and as intuitive as he was, that he should be the, you know, one sounding the cautionary notes in this particular Gemara is fascinating and in a certain way inspiring. Yeah.
Shouldn't we distinguish between exceptional breakthroughs and innovations and halachic things? Because what we're talking about here is a halachic deviation of past generations.
Well, that's even more obviously different.
You can innovate as much as you want.
Well, you can innovate as much as you want in the Beis Medrash. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, we're not talking about saying good, saying a star. We're talking about saying a star in Paskening. Even then, I think there are different levels. There can be, you know, new Piske Halacha, or a new approach to a halachic problem based on a conceptual approach. And sometimes it's not a whole conceptual approach, it's just a certain decisive understanding of a particular small point. I'll highlight this in just a second, actually. It's interesting to note, in the Elamokom Anichola Vasenel is Gadabo, so if you see the Tosas here on Zion of an Aleph, I'm skipping the big one, but the big Tosas, by the way, is about the status of Chutz Laretz in our precious Truma Samayis. Even if Beit Shan is really Chutz Laretz, is it so clear that there isn't a full obligation of Truma Samayis for Chutz Laretz, or maybe there's no obligation whatsoever? Are there different levels of Chutz Laretz? What about Trumos and Maestros and Demai and Maeser Leptis? Very long Tosas, we're not going to go into that. That'll take us too much time. But this little Tosas, Elamokom Minichu, is a very little, small, but important Tosas. Tosas says, Tamed, Lom Shani Hakim, Perek Bane Behema, there's a similar Gemara in Shabbos. Darshinan Esarbamos, Asher Alpnei Yerushalayim, Asher Bano Shlomo, Esher Ba'asa, same kind of Gemara. And there, instead of saying, Ela, Mokom Minichu, Lavosenu, his God there, Bo, the Gemara gives a different answer. Ela Mokom Rishonim, Lachronim, Lachronim, the answer is not important for the moment. The important thing is they didn't give the same answer that they give here, which is the same question. Like, all of a sudden, and previous halakhic policy was not that way, and they give a different answer. Why don't they just say, Mokom and Nicholas is God there? Am I lo Mishani de Mokom and Nicholas of his God there both? Can the Mishani Achi? So Tos says, Yeshlomar, the Bishlom Ahaka, Gabin Nechash and Nechoshes. Lefisha nasa al pia dibur tova rishonim or yisovrim or yisvurim shay osu levaro elahasa b'mer yutoim shalol levaro osu nabamos. Tosas has a very interesting ha'ara here, and that is in this case of the Nechash HaNechoshes, not sure whether the same is true for Beit Shan, you can understand the Nekuda Samachlokas, and that's very important too, meaning what was the previous status quo halakhic status quo based on, and why might one argue. Sometimes, ironically, if you can't figure out what the previous status quo was based on, it's more difficult to walk away from it. So what Tosas is saying is, in the case of the Nechash and Nechoshes, what they said was, true, it's being treated as an Avodah Zarah, and it makes a lot of sense to get rid of it. The other side of the coin is, it's Mipi Agvura. Can you get rid of something that served the function that it did and came from the Urbos? It's a very important halakhic and philosophical question. Right? This is a not a man-made object that's being utilized for Avodah Zarah. This has a certain history that comes to Pi Agvura. So Tosa says, we can understand what the point of argument is here. Therefore it's easier for us to say, you know what, Malcolm and I, we're looking at it in a different way now. We understand what they said. But if we can't pin it down, right, then this sense that, well, they obviously knew what they were talking about, you know, when you can identify it and define it, it doesn't mean that their authority is less significant, but it is easier to overcome because it's a concrete debate about a certain point. We can appreciate both perspectives. We can appreciate the new perspective, even, you know, the known is better than the unknown in that respect. That also is an important element in limiting Makom Menichu Avoseinu his kadabo. Either way, these are some of the issues involved.
She just accepted the supremacy of her mayor.
Ready.
There was
the
Aedis,
the
mayor,
and Rebbe said, based on that,
it wasn't the Chiddush on Rebbe's part. He just accepted that Aedis.
Okay, I mean, the Chiddush in Rebbe, I guess, is that he is, sanctioning a revolution in practice based on.
Chiddush, it wasn't something that came from.
Well, obviously, he was convinced, or he was accepting the authority of Rebbe. But either way, the question was, what happened to, generations of practice? So,
right. This isn't a great example of
the initiation
of a Chiddush.
Well, you might say that, so maybe what he's saying is Kal Vachomer, I mean, from the Raya, from the Chitas, and the Chash and the Choshes. Maybe that's even more of an innovation. That I don't know. But either way, the Gemara is treating it that way. Okay, that's a good question. I mean, when does that apply? When doesn't it apply?
Here
they're not. Here they're basically, it wasn't, well, in the matter of Eretz Yisrael, Beit Shan, and so on. So basically, there's no. The question is, what is the status of Beit Shan? It wasn't necessarily nifsak in a formal way. It could be that it was always assumed or presumed to be a certain way. That doesn't mean that it was subject to a formal psak halacha. Therefore, it's not given to that rule. In the case of the Nechash and the Choshes, so again, there are rules. I mean, when maybe he got a Bezdin that was bigger, but he still has to explain, well, what did Yehoshaphat and what did Asa have in mind?
We're very sensitive to people taking their own initiative.
Yeah. So what I was saying before.
In Parshas Korach, on the Parshas of Lo Yeh Korach Kadosho, should be on Moshe Lo, which is an incredible linguistic problem in that Parshas. So you have to see the Chassam Sofer.
But there also he is very... and again, you have to understand, of course, the Chassam Sofer was combating, it was in a certain point in time, where halachic authority was under assault, and he was holding the line. So he was an incredibly... Again, these are not contradictory things. They actually really go hand in hand if you understand the way that halacha works. He was an incredibly creative and intuitive posek. But he also had significant challenges to confront. And the idea that all of a sudden people can just say what they want obviously is always unacceptable, but particularly dangerous in a time when the reform movement is beginning to make some inroads. Okay, let's continue. So the Gemara says as follows. Rebbe and Rav Meir just said already based on Rav Meir that you can eat the Yarek of Beit Shan, meaning it isn't part of the Gvulos of Eretz Yisrael. Does anybody think Beit Shan is not part of the Gvulos of Eretz Yisrael? Baksiv Pasuk says the Lo Harish Menashe is Beit Shan V'Espinoseha as Tanech V'Espinoseha. So obviously, they lived in Beit Shan. Beit Shan was part of the community of Kal Yisrael, and people lived there in Eretz Yisrael. It was part of the boundaries. So the Gemara says, Ishtamitte Hod Amar Rav Shimon Ben Eliakim Mishum Rav Elazar Ben Pedas Shamar Mishum Rav Elazar Ben Shemua. He forgot by asking this question. Does anybody deny that Beit Shan was part of the original boundaries of Eretz Yisrael? He's overlooked an important point, and that is as follows. Harbe krochim kovshum ole Mitzrayim v'lo kovshum ole Babel. Right? There were two periods, there were two Batei Mikdash, in two different periods of Jewish history. The first one was the ole Mitzrayim, the kibush of Yehoshua. At that time, Beit Shan was incorporated, was part of the boundaries, but when it came to the resettlement of Ezra, which was by many less, much smaller population and in a much smaller geographic location, Har Beit Krochim Kivshum Ole Mitzrayim Velo Kivshum Ole Babel. The Kasavar, and not only that, but he holds Kedusha Rishona Kitzel L'Shaita Velo Kitzel Yasid Lavo, V'Hinichum Kedesh Yismichu Aleim Aniim B'Shvias. Okay, now what does that mean? So let me mention a couple of things. Number one, and maybe we'll have a chance to speak about this next year, but not so much today, but a few things very quickly. Number one, what is this confusion about the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, the time of Ole Mitzrayim and the time of Ole Bavel? It's clear that factually the settlement of Ezra was much smaller. What was the Havamina? Gemara thought originally it doesn't make a difference. If it was part of Ole Mitzrayim, then that should be Koveya Le'inyan Trumos Umaisra. So it could very well be that, and the Gemara hints at this in the continuation, that that would be, according to the Mandamar, the Kedusha Rishona Kitchula Shaita, the Kitchula Yasid Lava. If the first Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael had been permanent, then we wouldn't care about the fact that Ezra's resettlement was in a smaller location or a more restricted location. Either that's the issue, or the question is something else. And that is, now that Kedusha Shnia and not Kedusha Rishona is relevant for Trumas and Maestros, to what extent do we view those original boundaries of Eretz Mitzrayim, of Ole Mitzrayim, of Kibush Yehoshua, as still being relevant, as still being important in any way? And here you have two formulations within the Rambam himself. The Rambam in Hukos Beis Abchira, Perek Vav, Halacha Tazayin, where he talks about this transition from Kibush Yehoshua to the Ole Bavel of Ezra. This is Perek Vav, Hukos Beis Abchira, Halacha Tazayin. So the Rambam says as follows: Avochiv Arts B'Shvius B'Maitzros. The time of Yehoshua, the Kedusha was based on the concept of Kibush Arim. The Kivin Shenilkacha Haaretz Miyadehem, Batel HaKibush, the Nifter Min HaTorah Min HaMaitzros Min HaShviyas. Once the Bayis Rishon was destroyed and Klal Yisrael were vanquished and they were conquered, that neutralized that first conquest. And as a result, you had a situation in which the Kedusha was neutralized, and there was no longer Maestros and Shviyas. Then he has the following line, Shehare Eina Eretz Yisrael. Because the boundaries that were conquered by Yehoshua in the aftermath of the Korban, Eina Eretz Yisrael, are no longer Eretz Yisrael. And then he says, V'kivin she'Allah Ezra, the Kitcha, lo Kitcha, the Kibush Ela B'Chazaka. We'll get back to that in a second. When Ezra resettled, he did so not through Kibush, conquest, but through resettlement Chazaka. Sheikh Zikoba, Lefika Komokom, Sheikh Zikoba, Ali Baba, the Niskadish, the Kedushas Ezra, Ashnia, Hare Makudash Ayom, Apapishanuka, Haaretz Menu, the Chai, the Shvius, the Maestros, Hadar Shubyarna, the Chuskru. Therefore, B'Zmanazer, anything of the geography of Ezra is true of Maestros Menatar. As for Shvius, he says that also, that's a little more complicated, that we talked about it earlier in the year on a special Eretz Yisrael Shemitah Shia. Anyways, if you read this Rambam, the impression that you get is that in the aftermath of Churban Bayis Rishon, the boundaries of Yehoshua are no longer considered boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. However, if you look at the Rambam, it was Trumos, Parak Aleph Halacha Vav. Here the Rambam's formulation could not be different. Rambam says, Nimsa Kola Olam Kulo L'Inyan. He also has the same idea about, you know, by its Rishon, by Sheni. And then he says, Nimsa Kola Olam Kulo L'Inyan Mitzvah Tlius Ba'aretz Nechalak L'Gimel Nachalakos. There are three divisions when it comes to Mitzvah Tlius Ba'aretz. Eretz Yisrael, the Surya of Chutzlaretz. They are Eretz Yisrael, Surya, which is the land of Kibush Yachid, and Chutzlaretz. The Eretz Yisrael, Nechlekes, Lishnai. Eretz Yisrael is divided into two. What are the two parts? So he explains, Kol Shechziku Ole Bavel, Chelek Echad. Va'nishar Shechziku Ba'ole Mitzrayim, Bilvad, Chelek Sheni. The two parts are the parts in which Trumas Maestris is Daraisa, namely Ole Babel, and the second half of Eretz Yisrael is the land of Ole Mitzrayim. So instead of calling them Einam Eretz Yisrael, here they are a half of the lands of Eretz Yisrael. So in a sense, one could explain that this is partially what is going on in our Gemara as well. Gemara says, Gemara is debating, how relevant is the fact that in Bayis Rishon, Beit Shan was part of Eretz Yisrael? The Gemara says, what do you mean Beit Shan's not part of Eretz Yisrael? It's part of Yoshua's conquest. You're going to tell me there was a Korban, right, and all of that is behind us, but it's like the formulation, it's still part of Eretz Yisrael, isn't it? It may be a little different, maybe called Drabanan, whatever, but it's still part of Eretz Yisrael. Or do you take the view, at least with regard to Trumas and Isros, like the Rambam's formulation in Nukhas Beis HaBechira, which is, after the Korban HaBayis, all there is the Eretz Yisrael of Ezra. The Eretz Yisrael of Yahushua no longer exists. Now the truth is that there are indications that for certain dinim, the boundaries of Yahushua continue to prevail. A bunch of these dinim. Again, maybe next year we'll have a chance to speak about this, especially if you learn the beginning of Gittin, which seems likely at the moment. The Rav used to speak about this a lot. Before that, way before that, the Kafter of Aferach, who Rav Ashtori Aparchi wrote a sefer on Inyani Eretz Yisrael, so he made this distinction very, very famous. But he said that there are really two dinim of Eretz Yisrael. There's a din of Eretz Yisrael that has to do specifically with Trumos and Maestros, Kedushas Haaretz, and then there's another din of Eretz Yisrael that has to do with other dinim, like Nevuah and Kavura, the special school of Kavura of Eretz Yisrael, the fact that Nevuah could only take place on the soil of Eretz Yisrael, dinim of Chibas Haaretz, which is the beginning of Gittin, discusses. Ramban also makes this point in the very, very beginning of Gittin. Ramban there talks about the issue that the first Tosafot speaks about. What is the status of Akko? There's all sorts of conflicting evidence whether Akko is or is not in the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. So the Bali Tosafot have this perspective that there are two Akkos, or that Akko, you know, was split and it was on the border. The Ramban says, no, it depends for what. For Yonei Chibas Eretz Yisrael, like some of the Tanaim or Amorim, is to kiss the stones or the ground of Eretz Yisrael. As far as that's concerned, he says, Akko is part of the kibush of Yahushua, the Ole Mitzrayim. As far as Dinei Chibas Haaretz is concerned, it's part of Eretz Yisrael. As far as Kedushas Haaretz, Linyan Trumas HaMaestros, if you think that depends on the boundaries of Yahushua, so then Akko is excluded. That's the Ramban and the Ritva in Gittin on Dav Beis Amnav. The Rav used to make the distinction. He used to call it Kedushas Haaretz and Shem Eretz Yisrael. He used to say that there are certain dinim. It's obvious. The Rambam says it explicitly with regard to Smicha, that Smicha can only be given in Eretz Yisrael. But the Rambam says in Perek Dalet Hilchos Sanhedrin, the boundaries of Eretz of Ole Mitzrayim are koveya for Smicha, not the boundaries of Babel. So all the Rosh Hakelim ask, they say, but the Rambam paskins Inuchos Beis Abchira, Inuchos Trumos, he paskins Kedusha Shniya, not Kedusha Rishona. So why should you care about the boundaries of Mitzrayim? So the Kafter Aperach explains, Rav Ashtori Aparchi explains, Radbaz quotes it there, and the Rav is to say this as well, that no, this has nothing to do with Kedusha Sa'aretz, Kedusha Sa'arka, it's not Trumas and Isros, it has to do with the Mokom of Eretz Yisrael. And as far as that is concerned, that depends on the boundaries. So clearly at this Shaka Vitaria in our Gemara right here, but Ishtamitite, what he forgot about, the fact that Harbe Krochin Kivshum Ole Ole Mitzrayim below Kivshum Ole Babel. It's also interesting the language. The Gemara says Kivshum Kivshum. And Rashi continues with that. The Rambam very subtly, or maybe not so subtly, in both the Nechus Beis HaBechira and Nechus Trumos Maestros, when he wants to explain the difference between the Ole Babel and the Ole Mitzrayim, he doesn't speak about the Kibush. He speaks about the difference between the kibush of Yoshua, of the Oli Mitzrayim, and the chazaka of the Oli Baba. Our Gemara speaks like Harbe Krochin Kivshum and Harbe Krochin Lo Kivshum. For the Rambam, it's not Kivshum but Kivshum. The whole point is that in one case it was kibush, and in the other case it was chazaka. This, of course, inspired the famous question of the Kesef Mishnah. Kesef Mishnah asks the two questions. Number one, why it sounds in the Rambam that the reason that the Kedusha Shnia is enduring is because it was b'chazaka while the first one was b'kibush. So why is chazaka necessarily stronger than kibush? Moreover, said the Kesef Mishnah, why is it that the Ole Mitzrayim, the kibush of Yoshua, is only kibush? They also live there. So there's kibush and chazaka. Why should kibush the chazaka be worse than only chazaka? Those are the two famous questions of Kesef Mishnah. Again, not for now. This inspired a whole literature, like many, many answers to this question, all of which are very fascinating and have a lot to do with the halacha and the hashkafa of Eretz Yisrael. Why is it that chazaka shouldn't apply to Ole Mitzrayim, and why should chazaka be more durable than kibush? One possibility, the Rav used to say this sometimes, was say two different things, maybe more. One is that the chazaka of Ezra was rooted in Yerushalayim. When they came back and they resettled, they started from Yerushalayim. And since Yerushalayim's kedusha was kedusha Hashchina, which is kedusha l'shai to the kedusha l'yasid lavo. So it kind of was some sofer in another tshuva, a line like this also, how Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, for a different context though, Kedushas Eretz Yisrael is Yonekes mi Kedushas Yerushalayim. And Rav's idea, I think, fits in very nicely with this. The Kedusha of Ezra was more durable because of that link. Or another possibility, and that is that the Mesiras Nefesh of Chazaka is actually more powerful than the more dramatic kibush of Yoshua. That's, again, initially counterintuitive and very, very consistent with, Eilecha Yofa Min Atzniyus, is the Lukos Shnios, which endured. I like to draw the parallel anyway. The Kolos of Rakim of the Lukos Rishonos, resulted in all sorts of tragedy. So it's not unusual to find in Yadus that the more nitty-gritty, Mesiras Nefesh, oriented, they have to work together. I mean, the truth is there couldn't have been a chazaka had there not first been a kibush, just like there couldn't have been a lukos shnios had there not been a lukos rishonos, because it came off of Shavuos. It's one of the reasons that Shavuos is so important. You have to have both of these elements. But when you have both, it's usually the one